Good afternoon to everyone once again. It's a beautiful Sabbath day, and I'd also like to welcome those on the cybercast. Thank you very much for joining us today. Wisdom. That's a word you don't really hear very much anymore, is it? Wisdom. At least to me, it seems like it's almost disappeared out of, you know, our common vocabulary, the words we use in everyday speech. But it's something that God tells us to seek. God tells us to seek wisdom. And by doing so, it's implied that we don't naturally have His wisdom. If we have to seek it, then obviously, you know, we don't start with it. We don't have it. Or at least not in the way that we should. If things are going to be pleasing in His sight and to achieve His results, then we have to understand His wisdom, do we not? Let's begin this afternoon by turning back to the Old Testament to Psalms 111. Psalms 111. You might have thought we'll be starting in Proverbs, but we'll head there next. But let's start in Psalm 111. Psalm 111, and let's notice verse 10 here. Psalm 111, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do His commandments. His praise endures forever. So here we see that one of the fundamental foundations, or the beginning, as it says here, of wisdom is that we fear God. We have to respect Him. We have to acknowledge Him, don't we? We have to fear God to begin to gain godly wisdom, don't we? Now let's turn over to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 2 as we get started. Proverbs chapter 2. It's very important to understand where this comes from. Where does godly wisdom originate? Where does it come from? Proverbs 2. Proverbs 2. And let's notice verse 6. Proverbs 2, 6. Here it says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly." So the source of this wisdom is no other than God. He's the one that it originates from. We can't gain godly wisdom from any other source but from God. He is the foundation, the originator. You know, I looked at some definitions of wisdom, and I came across this one that I found was very insightful. It says, "Wisdom is knowing how things work in order to achieve a certain result." So in other words, wisdom is knowing the end from the beginning. Or wisdom is knowing how to achieve a certain result by doing certain actions. Knowing the end from the beginning, if you will. So if you're wise, you can say, okay, I'd like to make it, you know, down to Canton or something from here. So you'll take the steps necessary to achieve that. You know the end you want to achieve, and so your actions lead to that end. That's, I thought, a very interesting definition of wisdom. So we know that the fear of God is the beginning of it. God is the origin or the originator of His wisdom that we need to seek. But how do we get there? Since we need to seek it, we don't have it. So what do we need to do? Let's turn over to James. We'll get started here. James chapter 1. James chapter 1. And we'll notice verse 5. James 1, verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. If we lack wisdom, we just need to ask God. And we touched upon this probably about a month ago when I spoke last. Verse 6 gives a little bit of a qualifier, doesn't it? We can't just ask. We need to ask, verse 6, in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. A person that doubts is unsteady, unstable. Our faith is our foundation. It's what we build upon, isn't it? But again, since the wisdom of God is something that we don't naturally possess, we must request it. But we have a promise here, brethren. We have a promise that says, if we ask in faith, it will be given to us. How often do we request wisdom? How often do we think in those terms with that type of a mindset, with wisdom in our minds? Do we request it in prayer? I submit to you that we should request wisdom daily in our prayers. With the state of our society and the world at large, it's becoming more and more and more important for us to do that. The economy is bad. We all know that, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm referring to the decline and the decay of our society, the moral values and standards that used to guide our society. You know, Mr. Smith mentioned in his message last week how important it is to watch what we let into our minds. And that's very important. And it's become increasingly difficult, hasn't it? Whether it's in the entertainment that's out there, or at the workplace, or at school, or wherever we are, to keep our minds pure. It's really tough, isn't it? You know, the moral standards that this country was founded on were largely based on the Bible. And this country was greatly blessed because of that. But that's very quickly going away, isn't it? It's so sad to see. It really is. So we need to live in this society as shining lights, as good ambassadors of the coming kingdom of God. And we need godly wisdom more than ever. More than ever. And we need to request it daily in faith. And God will grant it to us. So if we do ask for wisdom, if you request it, we should probably know a little bit about what we're asking for, shouldn't we? What does it really mean? For example, if we say, God, give me the wisdom to become really successful in this world. Is that what he's talking about? That might be a kind of wisdom, but it's not the wisdom that we're referring to right here at the moment. Let's notice James chapter 3, just a few chapters past where we're at right now. James 3. James 3. Here we'll get a little bit of an understanding of what godly wisdom truly is about. What's he referring to? James chapter 3, let's notice verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. So one of the first things we see here, what's very interesting about wisdom, what's interesting about godly wisdom, I guess I should say, is that it's evident in our conduct. You see, you understand, you realize the results by the conduct. That's how it's evident. That's how it comes out. So again, wisdom, by definition, is knowing the end, and so the actions that you choose lead you there. The conduct that is displayed show godly wisdom. It comes out. And you see, wisdom begins as the acquiring of knowledge. But that develops into character, doesn't it? And then it comes out. It's evident in our behavior, in our thoughts, in our decisions. That's how it's displayed. Let's notice Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7. We'll jump back here to James in just a second, but let's notice Luke chapter 7. Jesus confirms what we're discussing in verse 35, Luke 7, 35. Luke 7, 35. Here it says, "But wisdom is justified, or wisdom is proved right by all her children, by the results, by the fruits of her labor." So again, the actions, the results, are what shows the wisdom that is in a person, does it not? Now let's go back to James chapter 3, where we were at, and let's learn a little bit more in depth of what godly wisdom really truly is about. James 3 again. And let's notice verse 17. James 3:17. "But the wisdom that is from above," or godly wisdom, the wisdom that comes from Him, "is first pure." It's first pure. What does that mean? Pure. It means you don't have any motives. It's not self-seeking. It's not self-centered. It's pure. You know, the whole idea of what Jesus Christ taught was to not be self-seeking, was it not? Not to promote ourselves in order to obtain like the most important position or the most money or something like that. But rather, Christ showed as the perfect servant, the perfect unselfish person, if you will, what we need to do. We need to be pure, not having our own self-interest in mind. He wasn't concerned about His own will. I mean, if you think about what Jesus Christ gave up to become a human being, to grant all of us salvation, that wasn't for His own doing, for His own good. That was for all of us, the benefit of everyone, all the humans who would ever live. All that mattered to Him was God's will. And He gave up His position to become a human. Unfathomable, the demotion, if you will, that He took. He went through unbelievable suffering for all of us. And again, it's the ultimate example of pure intentions. Not selfish, not self-centered, but pure. No motives. So the first aspect of godly wisdom that James shares with us here is that a person is pure, pure in thought, pure in heart. There should be a certain sincerity, genuineness, goodness within us as a result of what we understand. Continuing, verse 17, first pure, then peaceable. Peaceable. That's the problem, isn't it? If we take some of the wisdom of the world, you know, the strategy, the policies, politics we see in this world, you know, whether it be with people, countries, businesses, whatever, they don't result in peace, do they? Almost always they result in conflict and war and that type of a thing. So we're not talking about godly wisdom when we see those kinds of results. Godly wisdom results in peace, peacefulness, being peaceable with men. So when we deal with people, whether it be in business or in school or just out and about, are we at peace with them? Are we peaceful, peaceful people? The people we meet aren't always like that, are they? Continuing, verse 17. The next characteristic is gentle. Gentleness. Gentleness. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit, isn't it? Gentleness. And it goes right hand in hand with being peaceable. The nature of godly wisdom is that it is gentle. It's looking out for others, not for self, but for others. And as a result of the wisdom, we learn how to interact, deal with certain situations. We can be gentle, peaceful. The next characteristic is willing to yield. Are you seeing a theme here? Willing to yield. There's a wisdom that's willing to yield. You can cut people a lot of slack if we have the wisdom of God. There's tolerance, if you will. Tolerance, because everybody has weaknesses. We all have weaknesses, don't we? Everybody has weaknesses. We're not quite perfect yet. I wish we were. The time's coming, but not yet. If we're willing to yield, if we're understanding, that shows godly wisdom. If we don't come down, if we have compassion, it shows godly wisdom. Continuing. Willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits. Again, it's the same theme. You know, if you see strife, or you see issues always arising over and over and over again, you probably don't get the impression that that person has godly wisdom, do you? It's kind of the opposite. Godly wisdom produces mercy and good fruits, doesn't it? Verse 17, without partiality, in other words, we treat everybody the same. It doesn't matter what position they have, how much money they have, how they look. We treat everybody the same. God is not a respecter of persons, is he? And thus somebody with godly wisdom isn't either, without partiality. And finally, without hypocrisy. What you see is what you get. What you see is what you get. What a person claims, what a person says, is what they mean. And when you deal with somebody that has godly wisdom, you can count. You can absolutely take to the bank and count on what they say, can't you? Another aspect of godly wisdom, or a result, a fruit, if you will. Now let's notice what verse 18 says. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And I find that so very fitting, because if you look at all of these characteristics we just looked at in verse 17, what's the end result, or what's the overriding tone of all of those characteristics? It's peace. It seems that peace, then, is one of the main results, one of the main outcomes of godly wisdom. It produces peace. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Let's notice Galatians 5. Galatians 5. Fruits of the Spirit sound very familiar, don't they? Galatians 5, we'll notice verse 16. We'll make an important connection here. Galatians 5, verse 16 says, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh. And then jumping down to verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. Again, we saw some of those very same words described by James, didn't we? The results of godly wisdom are the same as the results of the fruit of the Spirit. So here's the connection we can make. Without God's Spirit to guide us, we can't obtain godly wisdom. It just wouldn't make sense to us. We can't do it on our own. It's a gift. And like we saw in James chapter 1, it's a gift that we can request and freely give if we ask in faith. This book, the Bible, is full of godly wisdom. And again, we need to daily request that God give us more wisdom so we have those fruits that we saw in James and here in Galatians, that we display those fruits, that they're evident by our conduct, that we have godly wisdom, that it's working in our lives, that we're always gaining and striving to gain more of it. Let's notice Proverbs again, Proverbs chapter 2. We'll read the verses just before we read at the beginning, Proverbs chapter 2. Proverbs 2. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment, if we do what James says, ask God for more wisdom, we cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Incredible meaning in those verses. But it shows that we have to do something. We can't just idly sit around and expect to gain this godly wisdom. We have to diligently seek it and ask God over and over, please give me more of your wisdom. We can study His Word. There's so much in this book, so much that we'll never learn, but we have to keep trying to learn more and more. And another tool that we can use, if we jump back to Proverbs chapter 1, verse 5, Proverbs 1, verse 5, it says, a wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Will attain wise counsel. If we seek wise counselors, then we can obtain wise counsel. We have many veterans in the church, don't we? Many people who have been in the church for many years. In fact, right here in our congregation, we have many people that are well experienced, if you will, that have a lot of godly wisdom that we can draw on. If we go and engage in discussions, ask questions, seek wise counsel, I encourage all of us to do that. Let's utilize them to learn more, gain more godly wisdom in our lives. So far, we've focused on wisdom that comes from God, godly wisdom. That's the type of wisdom we should be continually seeking. But since we're talking about a specific type of wisdom, that certainly implies that there's more than one. There's not just one type of wisdom, or we'd say, gain wisdom. We wouldn't put that adjective in front of it. In fact, there are more than one types of wisdom. Two more, specifically, that we'll look at today. Let's take a look. Let's go back to James chapter 3, back to where we were, and let's notice the other side of the coin, if you will. James 3. James 3, and we skipped over these verses before, but let's go, and then we'll start in verse 14. James chapter 3, 14. Here we'll see the opposite. The opposite. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not lie, or do not boast and lie against the truth. So we see here the exact opposite described from what James says here in verse 17 are characteristics of godly wisdom. Here we see bitter envy and self-seeking. That's not pure of heart. That's not gentle. That's not peaceful. If we seek things for ourselves, it's the direct opposite. But where does that come from? Where does that come from? Verse 15, this wisdom, and it is a form of wisdom, this wisdom does not descend from above. It's not from God, but it's earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. So we see that this other set of characteristics or the other results that can come out, such as self-seeking, are a type of wisdom. They are a type of wisdom. And they're not from God. They're from the other side, if you will. Does Satan, the devil, have wisdom? Because it sounds like that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about wisdom that would come from him, you know, the opposite of God. Does Satan have wisdom? Would we say that Satan is wise? Oh, we just read it. It says that this is wisdom, and it doesn't come from God. It comes from below. It's described as demonic here. But let's turn to Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 28, where God describes this cherub. the being that he created. Ezekiel 28. It's a very interesting passage. We're going to pick it up in verse 12. Ezekiel 28, verse 12. Here again, it's describing Satan, his creation. Verse 12 says, "You were the seal of perfection." But notice what it says next. "Full of wisdom and perfect in beauty." Full of wisdom. It's very interesting because when God created Satan, okay, created this being, he created a full-blown, full-grown being. Had everything, including wisdom. It's specifically described right here in verse 12. Now, what wisdom would that have been? What type of wisdom would that have been? Well, it would have been the wisdom to simply understand how things work. Understand God's system, his plan, how Lucifer would fit into this plan. That type of wisdom were given to him when he was created as a full-blown, mature being. So Satan did have wisdom when he was created. It says it right here, verse 15. "You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering." And then here it gives a whole list of different stones. Let's notice the end of the verse. "All of these were prepared for you on the day you were created." Let's jump down to verse 15. "You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity was found in you." So he was perfect when he was created. He had wisdom, so that means the wisdom he had was good, or it was sound. There wasn't anything wrong with it. But then there was a problem, wasn't it? Now, we weren't directly created by God, were we? We were born. There were only two beings, or two humans, I should say, that were created, and that was Adam and Eve. And when they were created, they were also full of wisdom. They were able to communicate and function. They understood certain things when they were created. It was immediate. And the same with this cherub, with Lucifer. He was created with wisdom because God gave it to him. He had it. But let's notice verse 16. "By the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within, and you sinned. Therefore I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones." So everything was going well until he sinned, until he chose to no longer be with God. He chose a different path. But what's really interesting is verse 17. Let's notice verse 17. It says, and here was again the root, the cause of his transgression. It says, "Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty." But notice what it says next. "You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor." He corrupted his wisdom because of the pride that had formed inside of his mind. He let that change his wisdom, corrupted it. He didn't lose it. It changed. It got corrupted. He had free will. He chose. And now what he came up with was a certain type of wisdom that was the direct opposite from God's wisdom, the complete opposite. And again, if we go back to the definition of wisdom that we started with, it's knowing how things work in order to achieve a certain result. It's knowing the end from the beginning. The wisdom of Satan didn't bring peace, did it? It brought war. He ascended. He wanted to become as God. Who was he concerned about? Himself. He became proud. He became full of himself. And he wanted to be the most important. He didn't want God to have that position. He wanted it. So he ascended. He tried to dethrone God. And we know the story. This was self-seeking. Totally, purely self-seeking on the part of Satan. So his wisdom, satanic wisdom, if you will, or demonic wisdom, involves how you can have for yourself as much as you can get for your own importance, whether that be money or status or power, self, getting as much for yourself as possible. You know, a whole system was devised that concentrated on a person's power, on their money, on their authority. He's called the ruler of this age, isn't he? And that's how this world operates. Not on God's system or God's standard of wisdom, but on Satan's. Let's turn to 1 John. We'll see this described. 1 John. First John chapter 2. Let's notice verse 15. Do not love the world or the things in the world, for if anyone loves the things of the world, or loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. That describes Satan's system. It's not about being pure of heart, looking out for other people, being gentle, being peaceful. It's about self. It's about what can I get now for myself? How can I become the most important? How can I have the most money, the highest position, you know, the biggest car, whatever, the most for myself? That's satanic wisdom. But it is wisdom. Because if you know the end, and you know how to achieve that end, that's wisdom, if you can accomplish that. So Satan, who is the ruler of this world, has a different kind of wisdom. He corrupted. He was born, or not born, but created with wisdom, but he changed it when he started to sin. It's the opposite of godly wisdom. But there is one more type of wisdom. There is one more type of wisdom that we'll look at, and we'll find it in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Let's turn over there. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. We'll notice verse 18. 1 Corinthians 1:18. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. It's something that, you know, humans, people, just don't get. They don't understand it. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and I will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. So what's he saying here? What's he talking about? Is there something wrong with being prudent? What he's saying here is that you can have all the human wisdom in the world. And you might be able to do well in this world, but it's never going to show you God's purpose. Let's notice verse 20. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? You know, the wisdom of this age is a little bit clever, isn't it? To use reason, to use logic, to promote yourself, to gain a superior position, whatever form that might be. Again, money or power, whatever. And all of that, God is going to bring to nothing. Verse 21, for since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. So according to God's wisdom, and his godly wisdom, the way that he wants his plan to be played out is so that through human reasoning, through human wisdom, it is impossible to understand the plan of God. You know, you can look at creation. You can learn things about God through creation. You can believe that he exists. There's some things you can learn about that. Absolutely. But you would never know what God is going to do in terms of bringing humans to salvation, creating a family for himself, just by human reasoning, human wisdom, and deduction. You wouldn't be able to achieve that end. It's impossible. You can't do it. And God chose to do it this way for a specific reason. Human wisdom is how things work in this world. And it's a mixture of Satan's wisdom and some godly wisdom, certainly. In, you know, promoting your own self-interest. We see a lot of that in this world, don't we? But there's also some degree of humans looking out for other people. For example, we've got politicians already ramping up for elections. And they say, you have to vote for me. I'm the best person. But then they also say, but the reason you should vote for me is because I'll do something good for you. I'll look out for you, or I'll help you in some way. So human wisdom is a combination of the two. It's not all bad, but it's certainly not all good either, is it? So human wisdom, again, could be described as simply knowing how things work. Knowing how to work the system. Knowing how to promote yourself. You know, I found very interesting. Actually, let's turn there. Luke 16, there's a parable here. And it has one comment in it that I found is very enlightening. Luke 16. Luke 16, verse 1 describes the parable of the unjust steward. We'll read through it. Luke 16, verse 1, he also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward. Verse 3. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I can't dig, or I can't build stuff. I'm not going to beg. I'm ashamed to beg. Verse 4. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of my stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he concocted a plan here, the steward did. How can he make this terrible situation a little bit better? So, verse 5, he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Cut it in half. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. Do you see what he's doing? He's going to all these people that he loaned things to, loaned money to, and said, cut your bill in half and pay me. Because he's trying to gain favor with these people so that when he got fired, he had a place to go. He had a job or some opportunity in the future instead of just being poor. Just being very shrewd, wasn't he? But let's notice verse 8. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. I mean, the master lost a ton of money, didn't he? He just lost half of whatever he had loaned out. But it was better than, I guess, getting nothing back. But he had to compliment the steward on his shrewdness, on his cleverness, on his human wisdom. But notice what verse 8 says. For the sons of this world, the people, the humans of this world, are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. It's very interesting. The sons of light, that's us, the people that have been enlightened and blessed with God's understanding. What Jesus is saying is, in human terms, humans with human reasoning are sometimes smarter or more clever, if you will, in this world with human wisdom than the sons of light, people who have been called. There are very shrewd people among us, aren't there? In this world, many people that are just brilliant at being a politician or a businessman or what have you. They're smarter than we are. We're not the wise of this world, are we? But that's not what's important. That's human wisdom, and it will get you so far in this world, but that's it. It won't do you any good in the kingdom of God, will it? Human wisdom. Let's look at another example in 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles. Found this to be very interesting. 2 Chronicles, chapter 10. We read here about Rehoboam, who was the son of Solomon. We all know that Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived because God gave him that gift. So you'd think that maybe some of all that wisdom would have rubbed off on his son, wouldn't you? Chapter 10 of 2 Chronicles, chapter 10, let's notice verse 1. So Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So this happened very shortly after he was appointed king and anointed. So it happened when Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard it, as he was in Egypt, and we'll skip down verse 3, that they sent to him and called him, and Jeroboam and all Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam and said, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore, lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." So Israel came to the king and said, "Look, we're being taxed very heavily because of all Solomon's building projects. We have all this free labor that we have to supply. Please lighten that burden and we will serve you." So the king said, "Come back to me after 3 days," and the people departed. Now, verse 6. King Rehoboam did what he ought to do. He sought counsel, right? So the first thing he did, he sought counsel with the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived. So he asked these people, he said, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" And they spoke to him, saying, "If you are kind to these people and please them and speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever." But here's the problem, verse 8. He rejected the advice which the elders had given him. He threw out the godly wisdom, if you will. The self-seeking wisdom is what he was looking for. So he rejected that advice, and instead he consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him, and said to them, "What advice do you give? How should we answer the people who have spoken to me, saying, lighten the yoke your father has put on us?" Verse 10, here we get the human wisdom. Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, "Thus you should speak to the people who have spoken to you. Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us. Thus you shall say to them, 'My little finger, my little pinky, shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges.'" So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day as the king had directed, saying, "Come back to me this third day." So what did he answer? Verse 13. And the king answered them roughly. King Rehoboam rejected the advice of the elders, and he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to it. And my father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges." So the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was as from God. What wisdom did he look to? He had two choices in this case. And again, his father was the wisest man who ever lived. Did he look out for others? Did he look out for his people? Or was he self-centered, self-seeking, trying to put himself in a position of power and importance as high as he could? He chose the human wisdom, didn't he? And it didn't work out well. It didn't work out well. Let's notice one more example in Matthew 25. Matthew 25. We'll start making a full circle here. We started with godly wisdom. We learned about Satan's wisdom. We learned about human wisdom. Let's notice the parable of the wise and the foolish virgins in Matthew 25, verse 1. Matthew 25, Verse 1, then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now, 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him. Then all the virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. What's the difference? What's the difference between the wise and the foolish? Why were they wise? What made them wise? They did what they needed to do to achieve a certain result, didn't they? They came prepared. They brought the extra oil. So when they had slumbered, the bridegroom delayed a little bit, they had enough oil to achieve that end result. They knew it was going to come down to this fact at some point. The midnight cry would come. The kingdom of God would arrive. And they had to be ready. They were prepared, weren't they? You know, these wise virgins, they submitted themselves to God, didn't they? No matter what the trial, no matter what the difficulty, and they made it through. They were prepared. They had godly wisdom. Godly wisdom looks beyond the self. It produces peace. We saw the fruit of the Spirit is the outward result of having godly wisdom in our lives. And it's a gift, isn't it, that we should request and ask for daily with faith so that it'll be given to us. On the other hand, the opposite of that is Satan's wisdom, which is self-centered, looking out for the self. How high can I promote myself? What can I do to move ahead, to get power or money or whatever that may be? Human wisdom is the mixture of both, isn't it? Some good, a lot of bad, but it's a mixture, it's a combination. Brethren, let's strive to have godly wisdom in our lives, to always request daily from God that He would give us that gift, because it is a gift. Let's close by turning to Daniel chapter 12. Daniel chapter 12. Let's see what it says here about those who have godly wisdom. Daniel chapter 12. And we'll notice starting in verse 1, but we'll focus on verse 3. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time, and at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who is found written in the book of life. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. But let's notice verse 3, brethren, let's focus on that. And let's be there. Verse 3, but those who are wise, those who have godly wisdom in their lives, shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever. So, brethren, let's all strive to have godly wisdom in our lives.